Miller.
No, it's Joe McGee.
Mr. McGee, welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Committee for your hearing this morning. And we will begin very shortly with your hearing. And I believe that the Honorable Mr. David Miller will be the one who has the honor of serving as the lead for your hearing. So if you guys hold on, the Honorable Mr. Miller will be conducting your hearing in just a second or two. So just hold on, sir. Good morning, sir. This is the Arizona Board of Executive Committee this morning. You're here in regard to a bill hearing.
Yes.
Okay. Could you state your full name and ABC number for the record, please?
Joe Eugene McGee, 1142-36.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to introduce the board members to conduct the hearing at this time, sir. To my very far right is the Honorable Michael Johnson. To his left, the Honorable Bill Rittenhouse. To her left, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman. My name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead today. Also, so you're aware, your brother James is in the boardroom today to be here in support of you. Okay, I'm going to go with some information, basic information about your offense and your prison term. And as I go through it, I want to verify that it sounds like it's all proper. And then we'll go over the information about you, and then you'll have an opportunity to let us know all about you, okay?
All right,
so you're 50 years old now, sir?
Yes.
Okay, and this will be serving a 21-year sentence for attempt to commit second-degree murder. The crime occurred May 4th of 1993, but Mr. McGee was not arrested and held in trial until November of 2004. He took a plea agreement and was sentenced on December 16, 2005. There were two concurrent charges in the offense, attempted second-degree murder, which was a 21-year sentence, and manslaughter, which was a 7.5-year sentence, and that one has expired. Mr. McGee will become paroled and will on December 8, 2018. So that even if the board decided to grant parole, nothing could happen until December. Well, let's see here. He was certified for this hearing, which is general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest on July 8, 2018. The sentences began after November 8, 2004. So, that one was a little bit confusing, and I couldn't find a fact exactly why there was such a delay between the crime and Mr. McGee being taken in custody. Now, Mr. McGee has been before the board twice for commutation phase one hearings, and both were denied. Were denied to move them even before the phase two. There was also a third instance indicating that Mr. McGee was in front of the board on June 7, 2004, which is prior to this sentence beginning date. And it appeared that a prior parole or probation was revoked at that time. And that was, like I said, before this sentence actually began. And we do have a county, there's a letter from the county attorney's office in opposition today. I couldn't find the hearing notes or anything from that revocation, but based on everything I could find in there, it was a TIS absconding warrant that was issued December 30th, 2003, and the revocation then was 6-7-2004. Okay, let's go over the offense a little bit here. believe that May 4th, 1993, fellow conspirator amongst the residents of a victim with intent to commit murder robbery. According to the official report, you were armed with a gun and Mr. Green was armed with a knife. Again, though, the city, in statements around pre-sentence time, you said that you had a knife and Mr. Green had a gun. But whoever took it in, there was a confrontation. Mr. Green began throwing for the knife and you shot him in the leg. Then that victim began struggling for the gun. And you shot the victim in the arm. Mr. Green, your co-conspirator, stabbed the victim. Then you shot the victim in the head, and he's still able to struggle with a gun, causing a few more shots to be fired. And during this struggle, one of the shots that was fired by the defendant struck and killed Mr. Green, his co-defendant. The original victim was identified the defendant as a shooter in Philadelphia for the lineup conducted in 1993. However, the defendant, you, was not arrested for the incident for approximately 10 years. When the case was finally brought, you were given the opportunity to plead manslaughter and attempted second degree murder. Does that sound about right, sir?
Yes.
Okay. After this offense, and before you were arrested for it, it seems that February 22nd, 1991, you did criminal trespass and got 1.5 years for it. July 8, 1998, you committed the crime of attempted possession of narcotic drugs for sale. And 3.5 years, on July 3rd, 1998, you were convicted of possession of narcotic drugs for sale and sentenced to 5 years. And on July 17th, 1999, you committed possession of narcotic drugs for sale, for which you sentenced to prison for 5 years. And I couldn't find any much in regard to a prior criminal history, but that is the basic convictions that you had in the 10 years between this crime and actually going to jail. Okay. The county attorney's letter is dated August 4th, 2018, and then total opposition to any kind of release. Okay. Looks like you haven't had any discipline for over 9 years, so that's very commendable. How do you manage to stay out of trouble?
Just programming and working all the time.
Just stay busy, so you go ahead.
I do a lot of programming and got a lot of trades and welding and laying concrete.
Well, that's really good. So you learned a lot of job skills for when you're in the future, correct?
Yes.
I believe.
Yes.
I believe that did you have a job when you were ever in the release to have a job?
Yes.
Working for James, who's here in the building today, remodeling homes and that kind of work. That kind of work. A good way to pay. Okay. And we have, there's, I think that's a couple more supporters for you today. Your mother's here and your sister's here, along with your brother. All right, so you have good support. That's usually look, we're going through the back and look for all the construction supporters, and a lot of times we don't see it, like, so, question mark, if we're gonna hear it, so, no one has done letters, you can come in and do it yourself, that's great. Okay, sir. What's gone on since the last hearing that, may have improved your, improved your, rehabilitation and enabled a little bit more, likely to see, succeed out in the community? What's been going on for the last, about now for almost 8 months, but since your last hearing, sir?
Been going to nominate treatment to the drug programs, like counseling. Staying busy working.
Since you've been incarcerated, have you taken any, anger management programs?
I took anger management back in 2001.
Okay. That would have been one of your other successes.
Yes.
So, but since you've been active on this one, you haven't taken any referral calls to name of management or that kind of thing?
Well, primary thinking and I think it's something like anger management is problem thinking and thinking straight, something like that.
Thinking straight.
And I took the RTC program. I forgot the name of it.
Okay, let me what it doesn't say
the form.
Okay, what's the RTC program for? I mean, is it for drugs or?
It's for basis for like anger management and rehab and time to prepare yourself for when you get released.
Okay.
I did that in 2004.
Yeah. 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Are you still doing the 12-step meetings?
Yes.
Okay. So how long have you been sober, sir?
I've been sober since 2004.
Okay. Basically since you were arrested on this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was scammed, that's why I turned myself in, because I seen myself going down the path I didn't want to go back to. So I went to the Alhambra and turned myself in and told him I was scammed.
So, okay. So that's where that revocation was, all right. Well,
yeah, I turned myself in.
Okay, were there any of them when they came forward with this to charge you?
Yes.
Why don't you give us a little idea of what your plans are when you get released, because whether we grant parole today or not, you still don't have a lot of time left on your sentences. So you're going to be returning to the community one way or the other pretty soon. So, what's your plan to release there?
My plan is to stay sober and take care of my daughter and my four grandkids and work and buy a house and support my family and take care of my mom.
You know, when you've been in jail as much as you have as long as you have, when you get back out of there, you gotta be careful how fast you try to move forward with some of your goals, because you know, you don't want to get too many things going and then trip up and get in trouble and lose your boat. So yeah, I'm gonna take some kind of
lead you more programs.
Yeah, well, it doesn't sound like you got, you know, some really good plan there. I'm just saying, be careful how fast you try to get to some of those goals, because if you go too fast, you trip over your own feet, you get in trouble one way or the other, and you will be back in, you know, back inside for other problems. We see a lot of that. So it's just a matter of pace, and if you kind of got some good family support, and maybe knock you on the, you know, on the shoulder and say, hey, slow down before you get hurt.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's so we get into the home remodeling business. What's your specialty, or just everything?
Well, it's everything. I learned how to paint, and then I got a skill in paint. I got a skill in framing, and I got a skill in welding and plumbing.
Okay. So we got a good round of good repertoire there, which is really good. I did a lot of that kind of stuff years ago. Okay, I'm gonna see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dale. Mr. McGee?
Yes.
It looks like you mentioned that you've been sober since 2004, but I'm wondering about a discipline that you received in 2008 then for drug possession manufacturing, and that was a major. Do you remember what that was about?
Yeah, I was at a Steiner, and I was holding some drugs with somebody, and they came to search my house and found it.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't using, I was just holding for somebody, and since they found it in my house, I told them it was mine.
You got the ticket. Okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Guy was just trying to understand. It was 10 years. When you absconded, how long were you absconded?
When I was counted for like 2 months, and then I turned myself in.
So why did it take them so long before they filed these charges against you, sir?
The court said they lost the case file, but I was already incarcerated in 94.
Uh-huh.
And then when the judge asked them why it took them so long to file the charges, they said they lost the case file. And it was a cold case detective that's the one that opened up the case and found it.
Okay, all right. I was trying to understand that long gap in between what actually occurred and the time that you actually got incarcerated. So, Mr. McGee, can you tell us what has changed in your life or your personality that has changed your disposition about life or just being involved in crime?
Well, my life changed now because I'm thinking positive. I'm not thinking negative. I'm not younger. No, but when I was younger, I really wasn't focused, but we're on the right things. Now I'm focused on the right things and the right goals. And I got more knowledge now, and I want to do the right things for my community.
So
my kids and my family.
So if you were released on home arrest, can you tell me or convince me why you would not reoffend, that we would not have to see you come back before this board under any negative circumstances?
I wouldn't reoffend if I was on house arrest, because I'm going to go to work and do what I'm supposed to do. And I don't want no ties with people with that bad influence who I was hanging around with. I don't want to hang around with them no more. And my health is gone downhill. They got me taking all kinds of medication, and they talking about I might have to get my colon taken out.
So tell me, I know you mentioned it a little bit, but you said that when you absconded at one time, you made a statement that you felt like you was going down the wrong road, so you went to Alabama and turned yourself in.
I relapsed, and I didn't want to go back down that path no more. So I went to Alabama and turned myself in, so I can get better treatment. I knew I needed more treatment.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gilman, I'm just trying to figure all of this out. We left the original offense back in May, 1983. Who was the leader of that? Was Vida the leader, or was Mr. Green the leader of that offense, sir? That's when our own robbery took place, sir. We kind of led the way there, sir.
Well, Mr. Green asked me, did I want to go with him because he wanted to make some money. I never did that before, so I just agreed to go with him. And when we was going up to the apartment, that's when he gave me the gun. Because he said he just got released.
Okay, so he had just
and that was my first time. That was my first time ever doing something like that.
So he had just got released and he went to go in.
Mason.
To carry out the robbery, and so he asked you, went with him, and you went with him, and I just want to make sure I understand what happened, sir.
We were just riding around, getting hot, and he said he wanted to make some money, and he knew where to go. So he asked me, did I want to go with him, and I went with him, and then when we went in there, and we knocked on the door and went into the apartment, and that's when he asked for the drugs and the money, and that's when Chaz Mays started fighting us, and that's when the struggle started over the gun and his gun started going off.
And at that time, your recollection, about how old were you at that time, sir?
24 or 25.
We have an idea, and you've been incarcerated some of this time when you were not out. Do you have an idea what happened with Mr. Green? Did he get charged with anything, sir?
Mr. Green was the one that passed away.
Well, he passed away, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he passed away, and so everything followed me when he passed away. I'm just trying to understand. I'm a little confused still. So then that's why you have attempted second degree murder because of that incident, because he passed away.
Yes.
Okay. And now back to, I need to explain that to Honorable Mr. Johnson, but back to, and what happened that 10-year gap, sir, from the time you were not incarcerated until you were incarcerated? What happened there, sir? You explained it, but I didn't quite understand it, sir. So what happened during that period, sir?
Within the period of time from that crime to the time I got arrested, that time it affected me so bad that that's when I get heavily addicted to cocaine and stuff. And I just started using drugs real bad. And then that's when I got all those cell cases. Basically, I was using, and they indicted me on cell cases. I was living on the streets and using drugs. Because I was affected mentally and emotionally from that night.
Sorry. Now, sir, this will make sure I understand, sir. Now, if this board saw fit to release you, whether it would be home arrest or general parole, I know and I respect you, so don't misinterpret what I'm going to say, but I don't want to say it in any way. You placed a great deal of emphasis on the fact that you're going to take care of your mother, your daughter, and other family members. What are you going to do for yourself, sir?
I'm going to keep taking programs and make sure I don't go back down that path and work hard and be supported be supported for myself and make sure I don't go down the wrong path no more and do the right thing what I'm supposed to be doing and not breaking the law and taking care of my health. Because I got a lot of medical treatment I need to be taken care of.
How long have you been diagnosed with this medical treatment that you were, that affected you?
About 2 years now. They got me on chemo pills, they got me on steroids, and they got me on antibiotics.
I admit that I didn't understand medicine at all. You said they had you on those sort of chemo tablets or whatever.
They said it was to slow down. I got ulcer, colitis or something. It's in my colon. And they said I got to stay on the medication or I got to get my colon removed and get it back.
So that might slow you down and you're getting your prayers, right? Because of the illness that you have, you may not be able to do everything that you think you'll be able to do. Am I correct, sir?
Yeah, but I'm taking the medication and I'm still working hard in here. It ain't slowing me down from working. I love the job I do in here and I love the job I'm doing, so I'll probably do it and keep working. And chemo pills, they ain't that much a dose. It's like 20 milligrams.
Okay, sir. Okay, well, I think those are all my questions, sir. Thank you so very much, Mr. McGee. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay, I don't have any follow-up questions right at this moment, so I'm going to defer to your supporters. If any of them would like to come up front and speak, you're welcome to come up now. And you can come up in any order you want to.
Patricia Colon, I'm Philip McGee's mother, and I'd just like to say that when he gets released, he will have a place to live. And I haven't checked with my job yet to find out if they still do drug abuse, have clients for drug abuse. If they do, I will enroll him as a matter for Black Family and Child Services. And he has a lot of support. He has a daughter and grandchildren that he hasn't seen, and that's all he's been talking about is being with them and taking care of them. But he will always have a place to live when he gets released. And I think that he have turned his life around considerably just by talking with him and visiting with him. And I would like to see him on the streets before anything happened to me. He lost his father in March. So I would just like to see him on the streets. Yes, that's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you did change your mind.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm James Collins Phillips, brother. He's a year older than me. You know, when we were young, we used to be like this. I miss him a lot. I made remodeling houses for over 5 years now. I worked with a relative named Brett Peterson. And if my brother gets a chance to come home, I would like to have him by my side again. And I can make sure I keep him straight, keep him out of trouble. That's what I'd like to say.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Mr. McGee?
Yes.
Could you move the microphone for that phone number away from your mouth and nose? It's very sensitive. Okay, thanks, sir.
My name's Lisa Coleman, Philip McGee's sister, older sister. I'll just be glad when he come home. He has a lot of support, a lot of love, family that loves him very much to help him stay on the right path.
Thank you, ma'am.
this thing that happened was an accident. It wasn't nothing done intentionally for a purpose on the murder part. And I know he was wrong for what happened, and he knows he was wrong. But me and my brother, my other younger brother, we're doing good work now, home remodeling. And we'd like him to come work with us. Keep him out of trouble.
Any questions from the board?
Yes, sir. You're part of the family business as well, sir?
Yes, sir.
And so you work, so you and your other brother, man, y'all would employ him as
yes, sir.
In the family business. How long have you been in business, sir?
Well, my brother James has been there for like 5 years. I've been doing the same type of work for a little over 5 years, but I just started working with this company with him probably a year ago.
Are you able to find, I guess I'll put it this way, you're able to find work, you know?
We have steady contracts. Yeah, we have a guy at Brent Peterson that buys homes, and we just do all the work for him.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. McGee.
You first
one for your family, and it's great to see that much family support. It's very important. So, we're nearing the end of your hearing, sir. The board will go into discussion in a few minutes to make a determination on your case. Before we do it, I'll give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Tell us anything else you think might be important to our decision. We just ask that you don't repeat a lot of the information that we've already covered. Okay, sir?
All right. I promise y'all and I guarantee y'all I would not return back to custody, and I would do the right thing, and I won't let y'all down if I get released.
Okay, thank you, sir. The board will go into discussion. We'll be talking amongst ourselves, make a determination. You may think that we're addressing you, but we won't be. We'll ask you to stay on the phone, just remain silent while we're talking, and once we make a determination, I'll get back with you, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. But we're now in discussion. Now, this is, it is unfortunate. You go back 4 years to the crime. It does sound like there was an attempt to rob the guy, but without seeing one case file or anything, it's hard to say for sure, but apparently, between the time lapse and everything else, they had enough to go with the manslaughter, which was in quite a drop from the federal order. And then on the other, on the original victim, on the robbery victim, would be the attempted second-degree murder. It does not sound like they walked in there with the intent to really hurt anybody, but road deals go bad and people get hurt. Remember back in 1993, this is 2018, quite a few years down the road. Now, Mr. McGee, has done a very good programming. It sounds like he's getting on the key one that he needs to. So his family support, it sounds like they're going to be getting him into some counseling, so he has some support that way. As much time as he's spent in prison, even with all the others, he's not been out in the community very long. And this one, cars are different, phones are different, everything is different. Everything. That's another thing we hear from inmates when they do get released, is that's one of their biggest challenges, is the cell phones and the computers. So much difference in 20 years. It's really not going long until Mr. McGee actually finishes his sentences and will be eligible for complete thank the applicant with everything that's been put forward, and the family support, and the release plan, guarantee now. I think it might be wise for the board to look at the aspect of helping Mr. Medina be successful by keeping him on control of the situation, so he can re-acclimatize. If he ends his sentence and walk out the gate, it's a total culture shock, and at that time, I don't think that we as a board or a state have done what they should for the rehabilitation cycle. So at this point in time, I'd like to start the discussion with the idea of the possibility of a release to hold arrest for Mr. McGee. That's what I'd like to start the discussion. Anybody have any comments? Mr. Dawson?
I agree. I would be agreeable to Mr. McGee getting a home arrest. This is an incident that occurred where he and his friend went in to do a robbery. They committed the robbery. The victim struggled with him and struggled over the gun. The gun went off and killed his friend. And in the process, the police department investigated, and somehow it slipped through the crack with the police department. And it was 10 years later when the cold case squad relooked at the case and they finally arrested him. But I think that he does have good family support. I think that he's sincere about not getting himself in any more trouble in doing so. And I think he started that step a long time ago when he said that he was out and he turned himself in, you know, because he didn't want to go back down that path and drugs. And while he was incarcerated, after he turned himself in, is when he wound up putting these charges on years later. So I would think that, and I would hope that Mr. McGee would understand that if he is released on home arrest, that home arrest, you're still in custody, you still have very strict restrictions, you do have to give the weekly status of what you're doing, you gotta have your weekly itinerary, you gotta stick with that itinerary. You still, you know, although you're at home, it's like being on home arrest. And you have a monitor, and he's going to have to abide by all those things. I think I would agree with you, Mr. Neal, that would, help him, reacclimate slowly into society, back into society, so that he won't have as many frustrating moments as we see come across here. So I would be supportive.
Mr. Neal. I would also be supportive. I think I'm hearing from him that he's done with drugs. And part of that is his own body telling him, you're done with drugs, because of his health issues. He just knows you can't use drugs when your body's in that kind of state. So I would agree. I think I could support home arrest.
Thank you.
Dr. Wright?
Yes, sir, Mr. Neal, I would agree as well, but however, I would just for the record to say that as always, the board is concerned about the victim, which was a very unfortunate situation that took place. Of course, that was back in 1993, I believe, which was some time ago. But in terms of the progress that Mr. McGee's made, in terms of his programming and his jobs that he's performing, while he's incarcerated, I think in the program that he's taken, I think that he should be given this opportunity. And if he does not live up to it, he knows what will happen. But I want to feel that he's prepared to live up to it, and I believe that his family would influence him living up to whatever the parole officer would require of him. So I'm in favor of home arrest. I said all that to say I'm in favor of home arrest at this time, so.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Okay, with that discussion, I'm going to make a motion to grant Mr. Philip McGee, ABC number 114236, home arrest and non-verbal parole for absolute discharge.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Johnson, and read by Dr. Wright and Ms. Rittenhouse. Okay, sir. I believe you've heard the decision. Now, one of the things you and your family need to understand on this, first of all, your eligibility for parole is December 8th of 2018, so you can't be released before that time, because technically right now you're not eligible for parole. But they do try to get the everything in motion ahead of time. But that also gives you time, because you have, DOC would want to do an investigation of your sister's house and make sure everything's okay and approve, and that is in time to do it. But what you need to understand about home arrest is like Mr. Johnson said, you're still considered an inmate, and you're going to have some very, very strict rules that go along the ankle monitor. And the biggest thing is your itinerary, and you have to give them a weekly itinerary of the place you're going to go and take your DNA, and they like that, and they check. Not every day, not every minute, but they check to see where you've been and what's been up to, and make sure that you're following directions. It can get confusing. You have good family help. They all seem like they want to really make sure that you're a success, so they may tie you up like a mannequin and move you around so you don't violate those rules. But remember, it's a very serious situation. We would like to help you transition back into the community, and this is much better than open up the gate and say you're done, because there's too many stumbling blocks out there. This gives you some time to get activated, okay? And then you come back in about 6 months after you've been released. You come back in about 6 months, and we'll check your progress and see about giving you a regular parole and open it up, okay?
All right.
So thank you. You wish you well.
We need an address. And we need, I would just note there was $2,100 in restitution owed, and that should be noted.
We need to go to the list as well.
Yeah.
So rather,
right, okay, well, you're going to have to deal with your restitution and more than
I'll tell you all that I'll come out senior.
Okay, it was, so we don't get, you know, everything, we get a packet that says this much restitution. Normally, if it's any matter at all, the inmates don't do much with it until they actually get out and or even have a job. So if you pay it off, you don't have to do without it. That's a good thing. And we'll need an address to put on the paperwork. Let me see if it's in there.
It's 5626.
Okay, yeah, 5626 South 13th Place.
Yes.
Oh, 85040.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the address we listed on there, and when it starts about rolling. Okay.
All right.
We're going to need to check for this right now. Alcohol. Put in the
okay. Yeah.
Some of those things. Some of them were applicable for him.
Right. Okay. Now there's some specific conditions of release. Or you have to follow all mandatory DOC conditions and sanctions. No alcohol use. Random tests for drug and alcohol. Initially, I'm going to say may not operate a motor vehicle. That's actually a real good idea if you haven't driven for a while when you've got an ankle brace on. That's really easy to violate your itinerary. And let's see. Well, no contact with victims and family. I'm going to mark must pay restitution because it's in the paperwork, but if you're satisfied, you don't have to worry about that one. And I'm going to partake in a verbal program as directed, and it's by your PO. So, and if you get programmed, put him in, make sure that you get clearance from the PO, because there are some programs out there that for whatever reason they can't, you know, really do anything with it. Okay.
Supervision fee?
Pardon?
Supervision fee?
Well, okay, yeah, that's
65.
Okay, this is a supervision fee, which is simply $65 a month, and it starts usually 60 days after release. So,
and we need to verify the Pardon? He has 2 months of support available, the financial.
Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's, as long as the family is willing to support him, but he just even wants 2 months worth of finances, and it's primarily when you're in half of the house, so they don't get kicked out for non-payment and everything, but he's got a place to live and support, financial support, until he's actually able to earn his own, which shouldn't be too long if he doesn't work with you guys. Okay, anything else to work out?
It's not that you forgot, Mr. Noble, but I do want to say to Mr. McGee and to the family that home arrest is very restrictive. He has a monitoring system that appears beyond him. The monitoring system is very almost pinpoint. If he goes outside your house and walked out on the sidewalk, it's going to show that he came out that house and went on the sidewalk. If he is supposed to, like he's working with your sons, if they go to work and they're supposed to go to work at 7 and he leaves at 6:30, it's going to show and it's going to be a violation that he left at 6:30. If you're fixing up a house and the itinerary that he has, that's a weekly itinerary, says that he's supposed to be back at that house at 5 o'clock, then he can't work over. He got to be back there at 5 o'clock. It's very restrictive, but we found more people successful when they've been incarcerated for a long period of time to work their way back in and to eliminate the big problem that they have by going and associating with the wrong people. So that has it. If it says that, you know, he's going to work at one location, then he has to go to that location. And on the way back, he can't stop off to say, okay, we just stopped off to get something to eat. If he stops off and gets something to eat, and it's not on that itinerary, that's going to be a violation. And he gets those violations, then he can get incarcerated and go back. I just wanted to explain that, because sometimes, you know, people just kind of take things for granted. But he, in essence, is still in custody of the Department of Corrections, so he has to abide by all of those things. It's very restrictive, and that monitor is really, really restrictive. It will show every location that he went, the name of the location, and how much time he was there, and whether he went inside or outside, it will show all of that. So that's what I think Mr. Neal's talking about that helps him reacclimate, where they're just not out and wind up getting in trouble or doing something, because it's really when they start associating back and getting with the wrong people that they get in trouble and come back before the board. So I just want you to be aware of that so that you have an understanding of what it means when he's on that monitoring system once he's finally released.
So while he's on the house arrest and he has the monitor on and he's filling out his itinerary, can he go visit other family members? He has to put that on the itinerary.
Wherever he goes, he has to put that on the itinerary and report it to his parole officer. His parole officer will go over a weekly itinerary with him. So he'd have a weekly itinerary, and that's exactly whatever's on that itinerary, that's what he has to do, unless he contacts the PO and make a change in them. Contacting the PO does not mean I called and I left him a message. He didn't get back to me. Contacting the PO is either physically or verbally talking with them and them making the changes, because the PO is going to be trying to look out where he's going, what he's doing, to make sure that he's not going someplace that he shouldn't be. And there are going to be restrictions, you know, of family members that he can't see, you know, depending on what's going on there. So it's just a system to try to keep them, you know, on the right track. And then they'll get the opportunity to come back before this board after that in about 6 months, so that they'll have an opportunity to come back before this board. And then, you know, if they do good, then sometimes the board will just, you know, take them off the monitor and put them on regular parole, take them to a step where, you know, they'll get it. But that's the process.
Okay, like if he goes to church or something like that, what does he have to contact his PO first?
It has to be on his itinerary. He can go to church with you, but he, you know, you can't wake up Sunday morning and it's not on his itinerary and say, come on, go to church with me. No, he can't do that. But whatever's on that itinerary, which the PO approves, which would be done on a weekly basis, he can do. Anything outside of that, he cannot do.
I think what Mr. Jensen is absolutely correct. And I would also caution you, Mr. McGee, be very cautious what you do between now and December while you're still incarcerated, because some people in there who may think that they're your friends, if they know that you're going to be released, they may try to get you in trouble. Therefore, make sure that you're very cautious with what you say to your friends, because sometimes they will turn on you. We've had that happen. So you might just want to say that's your decision, that you had a run-up for hearing today, and not tell them what the decision of this board is, because you've got to protect yourself, because if you get in trouble between May and December, you will be getting out in December. So make sure that you're very cautious, can't tell you what to do and how to do it, but just make sure that you don't get in any trouble whatsoever between May and December, sir.
Yes, I understand.
Okay, anything else from my fellow board members? No? Okay. Well, at this time, sir, this will end your hearing. Like I said, just be cautious about who you tell, and, you know, some people are spoilers, and they try to build you into something. But it seems like you've been doing a pretty good job on your behavior, so you're not one of the ones that's easily instigated. We thank you for appearing today. We thank your family for coming. That's very, very important. That did help our decision a lot. And we wish you the best luck. And once you're released, we'll have a checkup call in about 6 months and see how you're doing, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm.